The thing that probably the most consistent we do is an Advent wreath. Last year was pretty tough because we had a whole nother family living with us. So a lot of practices and all that kind of got jumbled in and sort of erratically got added. So I'm excited about doing a few of those things together. So we would always at dinner light the Advent wreath, and I'd give different kids different candles and the chance. And then we would talk about what each candle meant as like dinner's coming. So like we would kind of do it over dinner so that we're something we're already wanting to do together. It just has a particular focus to it. So, you know, the first Advent candle is for hope. And so we'd talk about hope. And Adea's middle name is Hope. And I'd talk about like, why did I name her middle name Hope? And what is hope? What are you hoping for? And what does that mean? And here's the hope. It's incredible. And it's never forced. And it's often silly. I've got 5 children spread from, you know, at Christmas time, it'll be 3 to 11, every 2 years. So, it rarely takes a serious tone. Sometimes I try to be serious, like I'm going to read these 15 verses of the, you know, nativity story, and you get fart noises and all sorts of stuff. And it's like, okay, that's fine. Like, that's not a huge deal. Like, we'll be here next year. Today, we're talking holidays again. This is part 2 of a conversation. So if you missed the previous episode, where we introduced the idea of how we celebrate holidays, and we talked a little bit about Halloween. Today, we're continuing the conversation, just kind of broadening it out to more holidays and leading into Christmas. How do we think about this? How do we follow Jesus in the midst of this? And how do we be a witness for him? I'm Jacob Sheriff. That's the discussion today. I'm with Josh, Tyler. This is my podcast. Let's do it.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Before we get into the discussion today, we do want to give you a bit of some preliminaries, a heads up on some things. So this will actually be the last episode of this season for now. We're taking a mid-season break because Pastor Jacob is going to be going on sabbatical.
Yes.
A much earned.
I think when this episode drops, I will be on
sabbatical. You'll already be, you'll be gone. You'll be unreachable. So with that, you're going to be out for like 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. There's no way that we can keep up with a weekly content schedule. Nope. With that, this is your podcast. We can't just like keep recording.
Yeah. Keep doing it without me.
It'd be interesting. That'd be cool. The Jacob Sheriff podcast featuring not Jacob Sheriff.
We could just bring people from your childhood in to tell stories about you.
Oh, there you go.
That'd be great. Yeah, do it. I won't care.
So awesome. We may be putting some more things on the feed while we're down. I've got some thoughts, but anyway, this will be the final, at least for now, episode for this season. For a bit, we're letting Pastor Jacob take a break, much earned, well-deserved season of rest. So before we get into the topic, the holidays, the follow-up part 2, y'all ready for the question?
Yeah.
All right.
Last one was great.
Yeah. It was a fun one.
I think we ended up 20 minutes in that conversation. Yeah. So just
reflecting on cool soundtracks. All right. So what is the biggest difference between expectation and reality you've ever experienced? That one may be a bit philosophical.
Well,
so like you could think of it as either exceeded expectations the positive or utter disappointment.
Yeah, that's more where my mind went. I'm trying to think of the appropriate ones.
I've got one to start just to prime the prompt to give you guys some chance to think. So, this probably isn't the biggest one, but it's the funniest one that comes to mind right now. So, couple Christmases ago, we decided to take the girls to Branson. And so we wanted to do something different for that Christmas and kind of start a new family tradition and go out of town. And so Audrey and I get online and we're looking for a hotel and stuff. And we found this hotel that had like themed rooms.
Ooh.
Right. So like
the walls were painted a certain color, and like each room had like a different theme. There was like a Dolly Parton room for some reason, and like a space room, and
I think I can tell where this one's going.
If you were talking about like Disney World, I'd be like, oh, this sounds great. You're talking about Branson. No, I think we know where this is going.
I'm talking about a hotel in Branson as well. So, anyway, so we're like, okay, this will be fun. We'll try to make like, there was a Christmas themed room.
Yeah. Right?
So we go online, we set the booking, and there's a little thing like in the comments. So I'm like, I'm requesting the Christmas candy room or whatever it was called. It was like a bigger suite, at least in the photos. And that's what we wanted, right? So I'm also in this like, dad wants to capture everything mode, right? So I've got like my camera and some audio gear, because I'm an audio nerd, and I want to have like good audio of the experience and different stuff. And so we make the trip to Branson. We go there. It's late. We get to the hotel, and they give us our room key. And so I'm tell Audrey, all right, here we go. We're going to go, because we'd requested this, this Christmas room or whatever. And so I'm filming our family walking up to the hotel room, and
this video is going to have to be released.
I'm filming this, and I distinctly remember the look of disappointment on Audrey's face when I opened the door. It was just like a normal room. It didn't have anything themed. It didn't have anything. And just the look of disappointment and sadness, because she was like building it up to the kids. She's like, all right, kids, it's going to be so fun. It's going to be so cool. And open it. It's just like a crappy motel room. Looking thing. And we're just like, she just, and expectation did not match reality in that moment. And so anyway, I'm awkwardly go back down to the desk, and I'm like, hey, we didn't get the room we asked for. We were looking for this Christmas room. They're like, oh, that one's being renovated. And I'm like, oh, man. I'm like, do you have anything? Like, they stuck us in an outer space room. So the walls were all like this badly painted mural of like Saturn and Mars and stuff. But it was it was an upgrade from where we had initially landed. And the trip turned out to be like, it was fine. It was fun. I got sick towards the end of it. So overall, this is why I didn't mention this trip and like what was our favorite trips. because for me, it was a rough experience. But yeah, that moment, it's like burned into my eyes of like, man, I failed as a husband and father of just utter disappointment.
It could have been much worse.
Did disappointment turn to frustration towards you?
No, it was.
Because there's the like, oh, and then you get the eyeball like, how could you do this?
It wasn't that malicious.
Okay.
It was tempered. But if I didn't like immediately go try to resolve it, it might have turned to that. So
God, I thought you were gonna be like, it was a honeymoon suite. No. That's where I thought you were heading with this. I was like, honeymoon suite. Oh,
yeah. That would have been great. That would have been funny, but no.
Man, I don't think I have a funny one, but you know what? Actually, yes, I do. I do. I'm going to say my not funny one first, because I feel like a lot of people will relate to this. But like, my expectations of what it would be like to have kids was much different.
that was mine.
Having children. I was not ready for that. Yeah, it was a shock. Like the lack of sleep. No one talks about that.
Yeah.
They've all blocked it out of their memory.
Yeah, no one tells you.
Yeah, you like all the photos you see. That's my expectation versus reality. It was my first kid. It's like, oh my gosh, like your exceeded expectations the first time you hold your first kid.
Yes.
Like you're like this is perfect. Like how could like anything be this precious that's yours, and it's a wonderful thing. And then like, it doesn't take 6 hours before you're like, this isn't exactly what I thought. Mm-hmm. And, then you take them home and you don't sleep, and since it's your first, it's your wife and I's learning about everything. So, you know, who's the most awake at 2 a.m. when the baby's screaming? And if they're breastfeeding, is there anything the husband can do to take? And it's like, I just remember like for the first month or two, just being a zombie, like not being nice to anybody. And like, you see these little photogenic babies when they're in public and they're just like, they're just so quiet and perfect. And you're thinking it's always that way. And it's that way, like 2 hours in public a day. The other 22 is just like, oh my gosh, are we sleeping? No, we're not sleeping. And just when we get to sleep, they wake up and it's crazy.
Oh yeah. So here's my other one.
Okay.
I was praying. I'm like six. I might be old, a little older. I'm going to be like eight. Okay. Somewhere in that range. And my family took a trip to Disney World. And the night before we're supposed to leave, I remember this very, very vividly. I'm laying in bed and we weren't super wealthy. So we all stayed in the same hotel room. And like my sister and I shared a little bed and my parents. Mm-hmm. And I'm like quietly praying because everyone's asleep. And I'm like, Lord, please just let us stay one more day. And I'm like, I know this is going to be answered. Like, I am believing. I'm putting so much faith in this.
Yeah.
Like, let us stay one more day, please. So that morning, we're all packing up to leave. We're getting ready to go. And my dad does the typical, like, all right, everybody go to the bathroom. And I was the youngest, so I had to go first. So I go to the bathroom, and I remember, like, thinking, like, what happened? Like, I prayed. Why is this not working? And I'm walking. I use the restroom. I come back out, and it's one of those like really heavy doors mm-hmm. that like when they shut, they slam. And I'm like, I'm a little kid, so I'm touching everything all the time. And I'm sliding my hand across the door, and my dad goes to the bathroom after me and shuts the door. But my middle finger was caught in the door hinge. Oh. Yeah. And it just obliterated that finger. Like, it was half detached. And I just remember screaming, God, why is this happening to me? And I'm yelling. And I'm like, this is not what I prayed for. And I'm, I was freaking out. And my mom's hysterical. Everyone's hysterical. There's blood everywhere. My dad's crying because he thinks he like ripped my finger off, which he kind of did. And we ended up getting to stay another day in the hospital at Disney World. So it's not, it's... Yeah, that was my expectation and what, you know, careful what you pray for, people. That's the lesson I learned.
Isn't that the like God's worst punishment is to give you what you ask for? Yeah, well,
that he taught me that really young. Yeah.
Oh, man. I don't even know where we can go from there.
Oh, my gosh. That's fantastic.
That's awesome. It's awful and awesome at the same
time. It's awful. It's awesome. Like 20 years later.
Yeah. It's great now. Wearing that metal thing around my finger for however long was not great. So.
Oh, man. Well, so let's get into the topic. We're still talking about the holidays. We're talking about Thanksgiving, Christmas, this season that we're in. Mm-hmm. How should we approach this as Christians? Like, where is the value to be mined? Because there's definitely value in it. There's... Mm-hmm. There's things to learn. There's things to engage in. But how do we look at opportunities like this? And what are maybe some of the things we need to be watching out for?
We'll be right back. Have you ever wondered what's at the root of homelessness?
I used to try to describe it to my husband that I said, I feel like I'm in this big spider web and I'm stuck in there.
And how wraparound approaches at missions aim to make a difference?
It's the things like that. The people who communicated that in spite of my rough edges, that they authentically cared about me.
On the Restorers podcast, we'll talk to experts, investigate current issues, share stories, and give you an inside look at how we at Water Street Mission tackle issues related to homelessness and poverty every single day. Join us by searching Restorers wherever you find your podcasts.
There's a lot there because I developed a pretty heightened amount of cynicism as a young adult, kind of just observing culture, hitting a bit of self-righteous indignation towards the consumerism of our culture and how Christians would be just as consumeristic, but then they'd get mad when someone says Happy Holidays, then sort of angrily, Merry Christmas, that's the real holiday, or Jesus is a reason for the season. But on the flip side, I didn't realize how many people were like anti-holidays and always critical, always cynical. And with Christmas, The big one was, well, Jesus wasn't actually born on that holiday, or don't you know that's a pagan holiday? And so I tended to take, like, I just didn't care. The holidays weren't a major, major deal in my family. I mean, when our church was small, I remember on Christmas Eve, or was it Christmas Day, when there was, you know, a couple hundred people in the church.
There's like a duck quacking in the background. I don't know what that noise is.
I think it's a drill.
Ah, there's a drill going on. So if you hear
a duck, ignore it. It's one of those.
We're recording in a multi-use building with people who actually have to get work done.
It was either Christmas Day. I think it was Christmas Day. So there was probably like a 5, 6, 7 year stretch where on Christmas Day, what we did is my family got up and we visited every household in the church. And so this is like a 10-minute drop in to everybody in the congregation.
Which was about how many people at that time?
It wasn't more than a couple hundred. By the time it was a couple hundred, I'd say we probably ended up seeing like 100. Mm-hmm. It'd probably be 100 people we would see.
Oh my God.
So we're talking like 20 households, 25 households, in a day, or in Christmas Eve and Christmas. So like, that's how my dad pastored this church. Like, he was in the mix of everyone, and like, as kids, like, we never had a choice. Like, you just, you get it done. And we were pretty poor, and so we never really had any, like, much. It would be like one gift or something, or two gifts. And I don't want to bemoan any of this stuff, because like, I'm extremely grateful for my upbringing. But like, I just developed like, this isn't that big a deal. And then as a young adult, I got like really cynical. And then I wanted to get involved in a relationship with a young lady who absolutely loved Christmas. That's awesome. I used to call her the Christmas Nazi. I love her. But Christmas was a huge deal. And that like made me go from cynic to a little bitter. I'm trying to play the game, but like, I'm not having it. Now, when I had kids, when we had our first kid and that first Christmas, that was different, because like, okay, and now I'm starting to see why we want to celebrate. But I still never really developed any interest in it until I, in my search for spiritual formation, spiritual disciplines, I realized, hang on, the church did more than just celebrate singular holidays like Christmas. They would put holidays in a larger context or framework of an entire season, and then have rhythms and ways of celebrating that whole season. And that's when I discovered Advent, and I engaged in Advent with an open heart and realized, the way I described it later was, Advent saved my Christian soul, my Christmas soul. Seeing how like taking an entire season to be intentional about a day made a huge difference. And then people like, well, don't you know it's a pagan holiday? So I did my research and started seeing like what was happening in the early church is that they wanted to anchor time around the life of Christ. And so what they did is they took particular holidays that the Gentiles around them were already celebrating and said, like, we as a little community will celebrate Christ on that day. And, Christmas was a holiday of, like, celebrating light, because December 25th was the first day that the ancient world could see the days were getting longer. So light. And so they're like, let's put Jesus's birth in this. Like, none of the early Christians thought that Jesus was actually born on December 25th. What happened is they took a pagan holiday and they converted it. And people were like, don't you know it's a pagan holiday? Well, don't you know I was a pagan? And Jesus converted me.
Yeah.
He saved me. And so for whatever reason, that's what the early church did. And this is the impact it had, is they turned an entire calendar into a Christian calendar. And then in Western society that got really Christian, we've now emerged the last couple hundred years from an Enlightenment, from the Enlightenment, more secular. And so now we've actually deconverted a lot of these holidays. And so I got back into the thinking, okay, what am I celebrating? Why am I celebrating it? And what effect is it having on me? And so it's irritating when I go to a store that, you know, up until October 31st, man, they are pumping out the liturgy. The secular calendar is, you know, from mid-September, early September to October 31st. They're just going to push Halloween, 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 Halloween.
Oh, yeah.
November 1st, Black Friday, Black Friday. We're going to have these Christmas sales and this.
Yeah.
And so my cynic side was like, you're duping an entire culture into just the liturgy of consumption. There's just, if I don't consume for this holiday, then I'll consume for this holiday. And then as I got into it, like engaging in deep practices and intentionality around my prayer, around my readings, around slowing down and patiently reading through the story of Jesus's birth, the advertisements had less power over me to buy, or I became less cynical of those advertisements. And so if people are super irritated that it once was a pagan holiday, like 1700 years ago, and they will not celebrate it because of that, okay. Paul addressed something like this in Romans chapter 14. He says, one person esteems one day as better than another. And this is where he's talking about Sabbath. While another esteems all days alike, each one should be fully convinced in his own mind. The one who observes the day observes it in honor of the Lord. The one who eats, eats in honor of the Lord, since he gives thanks to God. While the one who abstains, abstains in honor of the Lord and gives thanks to God. For none of us lives to himself, and none of us dies to himself. And he goes on to just talk about how we are to live in honor of the Lord. And whatever you're doing, do in honor of the Lord. And so if you're not celebrating Christmas and that's how you honor Jesus, great, fantastic. If you're cynical of it and you're self-righteous about all these terrible secular people who celebrate that, that's not cool because that's not honoring it according to the Lord. But if you're celebrating, are you more aligned to consumers who consume product to give presents so that you feel good about yourself, or you're buying things you can't afford to give to people just because you like the feeling of gift giving? Well, then you're actually not doing that in honor to the Lord at all. You're just going along into a consumerist culture that has found out that Christians and non-Christians alike will buy more product around this time. Mm-hmm. And so we just have to decide, like, well, how are we going to live in this moment? And again, it's the same strategies I talked about in the Halloween episode, that you can subvert, you can mm-hmm. participate. And that's what the early Christians did with this particular holiday, is they subverted it and ended up turning it into a large season that we call Advent. That has a lot of meaning, a lot of beauty, a lot of purpose that is not buying stuff. You can abstain. You can kind of withdraw or isolate from it. And that is an okay strategy as long as you're doing it to the Lord. Or you can counter it with your own. And that's where potentially the church also did, is they had counter to what the world was doing. And now we get that same opportunity again. And I have taken the route of renewing ancient practices that had an effect on the soul. And I personally, about 8 years into this, like, it has become deeply meaningful to me. And I do feel more drawn into the beauty of the story of Christ because of intentionally setting aside this time to pay attention to Jesus in a unique way. And I'm intentionally parenting my kids around that. Whereas my parents, like my dad, he had the approach that's like, kind of all days are alike, so I'm just going to keep doing whatever the Lord's telling me to do. And so there's like, as a church, there were years where we just completely ignored Christmas and Easter. He just like, dad, whatever series, it's like, you know, The Home part 16 on Easter. And he just kept moving on. And like, that was his approach. And he did it in honor of the Lord. And so it's like, how are we engaging in this? Almost all of this has to do with our heart. That's why all the fights and the disagreements, man, there's way more important stuff that we can disagree on and talk through. Mm-hmm. Having a fight about this stuff is generally a waste of time.
Yeah. I love what you are alluding to there and what you were able to, what initially had kind of just become a empty tradition or empty routine, or even just like a source of contempt.
Mm-hmm.
In taking the approach of instead finding a way to honor Jesus through the season, to pay attention a little bit closer, to slow down, almost in direct opposition to what the season or mm-hmm. what the culture is trying to get us to do
mm-hmm.
in the season, how that started to shift and change your heart. Like there's something to be learned, I think, from that process of sometimes, you know, our hearts are changed and then we're moved to behave in a different way. Other times we choose to act in a different way and then the heart change kind of mm-hmm. comes later.
And it's not legalism to say that. It's right. not like rules changed me. It was willingly engaging in certain small practices. I'm not talking about anything major. One year, I changed the devotion that I was reading. Mm-hmm. I just read a different devotional on someone that wasn't from my own tradition. Someone that actually did honor Advent and historically has honored Advent. And theologically, I'd probably disagree with a number of things. But just the patience of slowing down and focusing on different things, that was – and honestly, for many of those years, I did it all by myself. I didn't even do this for my kids because I was on a new journey. And I could tell I'm not in a great place to lead my kids in this. I'm still learning. I'm trying not to be a cynic, but I don't think I'm at a place where I can lead them well in this.
Mm.
And it's only been out of those like 7, 8, 9 years that I've been doing this, probably the last 5 that I've been like, we'll do an Advent wreath and then we'll tell stories around the dinner table and those kinds of things, or I'll do certain readings around the dinner table that we've tried to do some of these things. We've tried to reduce the number of presents and give our children the right kind of expectation for that, and then teach them how them waiting for that present is also us waiting for the Lord. And you know what? You get mixed success when it comes to kids. Sometimes you get it, and sometimes like that failed miserably.
Yeah.
And that's part of the journey I've been on. And I think me being less of a cynic and being more enthralled in the story of Jesus is proof there's at least some merit to this. I mean, I'm not going to say like I'm the only one that's that, but like I was a Grinch, and this is one story. You were present for it. I Christmas. So before all of us had a bunch of kids, we used to go to Hannah and Josh's grandparents mm-hmm. in Ardmore, about an hour drive from Durant. For Christmas Eve,
it was basically the North Pole when you arrived. It was Christmas. Christmas is in my blood. My grandma, just a little backstory. My grandma owned a flower shop for years. Like we did, I know I've told some of this on the podcast before, but we professionally would decorate things for Christmas. It was like, it was a part of our identity.
Yeah.
As a family, we took great pride in our Christmas decorations. Hey, you got a text there, Tyler?
No, it was the reminder to pick up my kid from school.
Well, that's a good thing to remember.
Yes.
But she would do things like special trees. You would have like a candy tree.
Yeah.
You would have like the Christmas tree
yeah.
with all the presents and everything. So Christmas was an ordeal mm-hmm. for our family.
Yeah. And Hannah's birthday is 7 days before Christmas. Yep. And she was among the people that loved that. There's a group of people that hate that, but she loved it. So Christmas is a huge deal. Well, traditionally, on Christmas Eve, there's a Christmas Eve present that includes your pajamas for that Christmas. And that tradition holds true today. Every Christmas Eve, we know at least one present. We're getting new pajamas. All of us, every single person.
Matching pajamas.
So So I, but that particular night, I think it was like a Wednesday night. So Christmas was Thursday, Christmas Eve's Wednesday, and y'all's whole family are there. And I don't think we were married. I wonder if it was the year before we got married or the year we got married. I can't remember. It was pretty early.
Y'all got married in December.
We got married in December. So I want to say it was the first or second Christmas, maybe after we got married. Yeah. Anyway, it was still pretty early in our relationship. It's not like we had kids or anything. So, but it's like, so Wednesday night, like we still had service. I can't remember what all it was. I just remember I had to do something with the church and I was going to show up like hours late. And one thing about me, so this maybe tie in some couple episodes ago, we talked about personality and, part of how I'm wired. I don't show emotion. And so opening presents, I don't get overly excited, but you know what? I don't get overly discouraged either. And so, you know, I open up a present and it's awesome. And I go, it's awesome. I'm not like, you know, extravagantly reacting to everything. And it's fun to have Josh and Hannah's mom open presents because whether it actually is awesome or not, she makes you feel like it's awesome.
Oh yeah.
So I'm already, you know, not the most excited about anything. And I don't like people watching me. I open presents a particular way. I want to honor I want to honor the person who wrapped it. And so I hold the box, I find the seams, and I take two fingers and I take off each piece of tape. And their family is super good at wrapping presents and they look really good. And Hannah, she's a pro at this, so they look awesome. And I don't like people watching because I don't react. And then I take forever to open a present. I don't know why I'm that way. I at least have two kids that do not shred. It's awesome to watch them open presents. But anyway, so
preserve the paper.
I'm showing so up.
Complicated.
Dude. I'm showing up hours late and I walk in and their grandparents don't have a big house. And so there's probably like 18 people. I mean, there's a lot of people and it's in a small space. And they've all opened their pajamas. Half of them are changed into their pajamas. They're eating. And then Hannah's like, here's your present.
Oh no.
And she makes me sit down and everybody watches me open this present.
And nobody knows what's inside for sure. Oh, that's awesome.
And I am giving, I don't know if I've ever had eyes that like pierce you. I was upset. She's so excited about me opening this present. And I'm like, just one piece of tape at a time. And I told her that night, you will never do that to me again.
You will never give me
ever
make me open a present in front
Jeez,
of you.
Man.
It's funny now. I was mad. I was mad at her. So I'm giving that story to show some contrast.
So how grinchy you were.
Golly. Yeah, that's how grinchy I was. Like I was so mad at her. It's stupid now, but like at that time, I think Austin has just cause they weren't married. I don't think Abby and Austin were married yet. Austin has distinct memories of that. And he even told Abby, don't ever make me do that. Oh, man. So I have come an extremely long way on this, and it's not because I got older and got better presents. It's just like I am going to be emphatic about my relationship with Jesus in this time, and how I shape my kids. Because I mean, kids, like, they're excited about it. Of course, they're going to get presents out of it. Even if it's just like two presents, they're going to get something out of it.
Yeah,
and so we have. It is prime time to shape our children a particular way and be able to make the gospel make sense in a unique way that they're experiencing something, not just like, you know, God is like Santa Claus.
Yeah.
Like, you don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. But when you try to communicate what I look at it is, isn't even just as much about his birth. What Advent, the season of Advent is supposed to do is to draw the tension of his first Advent, his first coming, and by paying attention to that story, it gives us hope and anticipation for a second coming or a second advent. Mm-hmm. And it's that that I'm getting to instill in our children one little bit at a time. Just in the same way you're excited about that box that's under the tree, we are excited that at some point in time, Jesus is coming back and all this pain and suffering that we're experiencing, he's going to make new. Yeah. So that for everyone that's cynical about the holiday or specifically Christmas, or people that are just write it off because it's a pagan holiday and they don't want their children to become consumers, I totally understand and I can totally sympathize. But there is an option on the table for subversion or counter culture, not just isolation. And there is a way to live subversively in the Christian season of Advent and celebrating Christmas, the 12 days of Christmas, according to the Christian calendar, because one day of Christmas is not enough to bask in the revelation of Christ's coming into this world. When the rest of the world is celebrating on December 26th, Boxing Day, and you see all the different decorations that everybody in all the different stores have put up, they're immediately coming down. Why? Because they got the next holiday that they need to sell you product for.
Yeah, dude, New Year's.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, do you know why New Year's is on that day? Because that would have been the day of Jesus' circumcision. Day 8, on the 8th day.
Huh.
So that's why. Like we don't know how much of our calendar is shaped by the Christian calendar initially, that has just been totally deconverted, secularized. Yeah. But the reason why we celebrate January 1st as the first day of the year, I can't remember when it was, but it was because if December 25th is the day we celebrate his birth, he would have gotten his name, Jesus, on the day of his circumcision, which was day 8, the 8th day.
That's really cool.
I did not know this.
Yeah. So like how many people celebrate New Year's and you're mad about Christmas being a pagan holiday, but from day one, January 1st is a Christian holiday.
Yeah.
So what high horse are you standing on there? Not you guys specifically.
No, you tell them.
Get after them. Yeah.
I just, I do have my own journey. So I don't have there's not a lot of things I have a long journey on. Advent, I do. And I do have some conviction about it. Because by approaching something that many people take for granted, they either just succumb to whatever cultural tide is taking them, or they try to counter it in some kind of carnal cynicism, neither of those are leading in the right direction. And through my own immaturity and mistakes and stumbling through the process, I have many years now by paying special attention, that entire season has a whole new texture to me. It has a whole new sense and spirit. And we talked about that last episode about there is a spirit in the air of a particular season. Well, right now, if you're not a church going person and you're not necessarily a Christian, you're not necessarily an atheist, but like you're just not a Christian, what is the spirit that you would experience? Well, there's kind of a spirit of like gratitude and giving, generosity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And in that spirit, there's one strategy of, you know, big box stores that are going to try to capitalize on the generosity by selling you product. But Christians can take the spirit of gratitude and generosity and intentionally point in the direction how Jesus is the greatest revelation of both and point people in the direction of Jesus. And those who do call Jesus Lord can actually grow in our intimacy and fellowship with him and our understanding of him. And by celebrating him in a particular way, not necessarily the forms being what is important, but practices that get me in his presence in that time with a unique focus, you can't just say, well, I celebrate his birth all the time. Not really. Like, you know, I want to tell you happy birthday on your birthday.
Yeah.
Not because I don't care about your birth 364 days out of the year, right. But like that day has a special tone to it that I would want to say, hey, I'm glad you're alive. I'm glad we know each other. Happy birthday. well, why would we not at least do something like that for Jesus? That, like, well, I kind of want to pay attention to his birth, because I can't pay attention to his birth all the time. And if I say, well, you know, when the Lord lays it on my heart, well, how often is that? It's the same thing about his resurrection at Easter. Of right. course, we celebrate the resurrection every Sunday. But there is a particular...
We'll be right back.
Are you driven by a desire to create change? Dive into From Passion to Purpose, where we unlock the stories of nonprofit trailblazers. Get inspired as leaders share invaluable tips and transformative tales that empower you to make a lasting impact in your community. Tune in and ignite your passion into purpose today.
Emphasis on that day, Easter, that we celebrate. Right. That creates a spirit of a season that you can attend to that in a greater level.
Yeah. And especially when you're doing it with other people as yes. well, where you're collectively and, you know, joined with family, with community, paying attention to those things, it changes perspective. It changes atmosphere. It changes really, it starts to, it starts to make room for an actual shift in what we value as a culture.
Yeah.
If enough people are paying attention to the right things, are not being swayed by just the rhythms of culture,
mm-hmm.
there's value in having these marked times every year that, regardless of what's going on personally, or regardless of what's going on at that time randomly in our lives, there's an expectation of, hey, we're going to take time to pay attention to these things
yeah.
at this time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there, for me, one of the things that has been beneficial in learning from you on Advent and the series that we've been doing the past several years is just the emphasis on waiting and being intentional to slow down
mm-hmm.
and to pay attention, because that time of year, just like I've shared some of my family's growing up, like some of our story was pretty busy, pretty mm-hmm. frantic, like even just from a business standpoint, there mm-hmm. was a lot of work that mm-hmm. we would do to, and so you get, I would look forward to that time, not just because of presence. I would look forward to that time because I get to be with family, and there's a lot of good things I valued about that time. But it was always frantic and busy. Mm-hmm. There was what has been really redemptive about celebrating Advent for me is a recognition of how I can model for my kids that we don't have to be frantic all the mm-hmm. time, that no matter how busy everything is around us, we can choose to slow down. We can choose to pay attention. And, you know, it was last year at Advent that we slowed down long enough and with enough patience that Eva like responded and mm-hmm. wanted to ask Jesus in her heart. And mm-hmm. and it was because we had crafted moments like that to happen. Not that we were even necessarily like seeking for that particular moment at that particular time. It was just,
yeah.
we're going to make space and let's see what God does.
Yeah.
And so to maybe add on to this for Advent specifically, what are some of the things that we've put in place that you've put in place that mm-hmm. your family does that you've found helpful in kind of fostering some of those moments or
yeah.
those values?
The thing that probably the most consistent we do is an Advent wreath. Last year was pretty tough because we had a whole nother family living with us. So a lot of practices and all that kind of got jumbled in and sort of erratically got added. So I'm excited about doing a few of those things together. So we would always at dinner light the Advent wreath, and I'd give different kids different candles and the chance. And then we would talk about what each candle meant as like dinner's coming. So like we would kind of do it over dinner so that we're something we're already wanting to do together. It just has a particular focus to it. So, you know, the first Advent candle is for hope. And so we'd talk about hope And Adea's middle name is Hope. And I'd talk about like, why did I name her middle name Hope? And what is Hope? What are you hoping for? And what does that mean? And here's the hope it's in Christ. And it's never forced. And it's often silly. I've got 5 children spread from, you know, at Christmas time, it'll be 3 to 11, every 2 years. So, it rarely takes a serious tone. Sometimes I try to be serious. Like, I'm going to read these 15 verses of the, you know, nativity story, and you get fart noises and all sorts of stuff. And it's like, okay, that's fine. Like, that's not a huge deal. Like, we'll be here next year talking about hope and working this through again. So then, you know, the second candle, peace, and like, honestly, a lot of the key themes each week, like, I have a kid whose name means that or is literally that, like hope, peace. Olivia's name means peace. Joy, Emma is our representation of joy. So, or like, her favorite color is pink. So we always make a big deal about pink, the pink candle of joy. And that's Emma. So little things like that has been the start. And then we try to do something around the dinner table, because there's something like, every family needs to have some kind of practice of the dinner table, just at least a couple times a week. As many nights as possible is ideal, but just a couple times. So we try to take something we're already trying to do and just add a particular focus to it around Jesus, and then reading the stories or things like that. And then I try to take bedtime. So, man, kids are liturgical. You turn something into a routine, they want to do it all the time. So we have something we call candlelight prayer, where when dad... like, when I'm on my game, and I'm not currently on my game, so I'll admit that readily. Part of the way I wind them down is we turn off all the lights and we get in a circle on the floor and I light a candle and I go through an evening compline prayer liturgy and I just pray it. And when we do it consistently, you can see like my kids are being able to quote it with me or quote certain prayers with me. I do some that's call and response kind of style. But at Advent, I'll do a reading and then I'll do prayer. And again, I got 5 children. If my 3-year-old is present, it never, ever works out seriously. Never. My Emma is 5, and about half the time, something silly is going on. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, no big deal. And then we pick certain movies that we watch together as a family, like on the Friday nights. The newest one of Mary and Joseph, what's the one with the donkey? The donkey. It's a new cartoon.
The
Star.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's become the favorite because the one scene where the donkey ruffles his hair and I'm Joseph and I'm in a bad mood. And like my son will randomly pull that out and ruffle his hair and go, I'm Joseph, I'm in a bad mood. Or I'm daddy, I'm in a bad mood. And like, so that's one we watch. We'll watch The Grinch. And we'll watch, I haven't gotten to Home Alone yet because I don't want my kids to feel like A, they'll be left, or B, that there's going to be robbers all the time. So they're going to get to an age appropriate time where we'll do Home Alone. Right. It's a Wonderful Life. I mean, some VeggieTales stuff.
Die Hard. You know,
Die Hard is
all the great Christmas movies.
Charlie Brown.
Yeah. So we try to have like something like that. It's all the family. And there's tons of other things that, you know, we've experimented with here and there. Those are the things that seem to land most years when we do that kind of stuff. We'll have a particular game. But honestly, what the kids start loving the most is once they get out of school, it's like a bunch of times that leads up to the whole your side of the family all gets together. And sometimes it's like 4 days in a row where everybody's together. And that's what the kids look forward to the most. And so we've tried a couple years to do random things like storytelling or reading a book or a craft when all the grandkids are together. But as the grandkids have gotten more and more and they're young, and there's usually just messes and there's not a big enough place to have them do a certain anyway, we've tried a bunch of different stuff, but everything has just been family and pointed at Jesus as best you can.
Yeah. Yeah. I think
our experience has actually been pretty similar in what we've tried to do. I like the idea of doing the candle lighting around dinner. We've been doing it just around our normal prayer time. And usually it's like a, you know, can I light it tonight? No, I want to light it tonight. I'm like, all right, let's remember we're trying not to be like self-focused during the season, even about who gets to light the candle or whatever. Yeah. But we started doing something with our girls a few years ago. This may be the third or fourth year. I don't remember now when we originally started it. But I got a bit just heightened in my awareness of how much emphasis was being placed on getting a bunch of gifts, mm-hmm. like at Christmas or whatever. And we're happy to give presents to our kids. We're happy to take them to grandma's house, to Mimi's house and Mima's house, where they get tons of presents, and that's all well and good and fun. But we just noticed like they get a bit overcharged with that, mm-hmm. of just like, you know, it's all so much all at once. Like, are we taking our time with that? Are we appreciating what's being given to us? Or mm-hmm. are we just like playing into that frenzy of, yeah. oh boy, presents, I'm excited.
Because it really is great as a parent to see, I got my kid this thing or whatever, mm-hmm. and you see them open it and that face mm-hmm. that says like, I feel loved because you thought about me about this thing.
Yep.
Problem is we try to do that like 15 times over, mm-hmm. and you get that out of like two, and then 10 of those items a month later are just in yeah. a toy box or yep. whatever. But
keep so going. What we started to do was to intentionally scale back the number, not just because, you know, we're like, we're going to be cheap and we don't want it, but so that they have a greater appreciation of what they do get. But then we'll also take them and let them pick out something for each other. Mm-hmm. So instead of us just being the ones who pick out the presents, I take Eva and I'm like, all right, we're going to pick out something for Alea. What are we going to get her? Mm-hmm. We're going to pick out something for Ellie. What are we going to get her? And we do that with each of them. So yeah. they get a sense and a value for what it's like to actually get that experience, to yeah. give that yeah. and see their sisters.
I picked that out for you, yeah. sister. And man, that is so cool to see your yeah. face about and something I picked out for you.
What I've found is like they get more excited about those moments even yeah. than opening their own sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like that's
have been they let beneficial. Have they let the secret out?
The what secret?
The secret. So like we've done like, that before and like Israel's the worst. If, yeah. You're going to love what I got you. It's,
yeah.
I can't tell you what it is, but I promise you you're going to love it.
What we try to do, we try to let them pick it, but then like pretty quickly, like remove it from their radar in mm-hmm. the sense of like, hey, we're not going to have you with your siblings for a couple hours after we picked it out. Cause especially Eva, she'd just be like the same thing. You're going to love the Pokemon toy I picked up or whatever. And we're like, oh, no, that's not what we got you.
Don't worry about asking mom for your Bluey stuffed animals.
Yeah, yeah.
I got you that. But you're just don't tell mom I told you.
That's awesome. But anyway, that's been a really fun thing to see with them, because I feel like it's been placing the emphasis on the right things. Anything that's not geared towards just heaping more stuff on ourselves, which, you know, it was never the intent of even the Christmases we had growing up.
Yeah.
It was never something that was implied or anything like that. But it's something that could become a side effect if we're not monitoring it and not paying attention to it.
Yeah.
And so little ways to place the emphasis in the right spot, and on the right things, I think is really important for us to pay attention to as we're raising kids.
Mm-hmm. What do you think?
That's good, man.
I mean, you're pretty fresh to the adventure, even though you got four boys.
We're super new to this. So we've done some Advent readings, but I mean, we've not done a wreath.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. Wreath.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. I don't know why that feels so wrong coming out of my mouth. Anyways, but like we've talked about like what we want the boys to take away from Christmas in that time, and it not be this huge, like, it's just presents. It's mm-hmm. like, it's all about presents. You're going to get presents. So for both of us, Christmas season growing up was I mean, almost exactly what you guys said. Mm. Like, we would visit the family. We would go see my grandma. We'd get tons of presents. And it kind of unintentionally lost its focus in our family. Mm. Not that Christmas wasn't great. It was just very consumeristic. And so for us, we didn't want that. But we didn't go the Advent route necessarily. But we did the, like, we're going to do fewer gifts. We're going to tell the story. We're going to read from the story. So we made the focus in that regard. That's probably more what most people do as opposed to Advent. I feel like the odd one out here, but I'm probably, everybody's probably like, yeah, that's what I do. They're probably like, thank God I'm not weird. Yeah. But I mean, we, like, as a church, we've done Advent with the church, just mm-hmm. never in our home. So, yeah.
Well, it's been a slow brew in the church. Yeah. I've acknowledged that. There's many people. there's a number of people who grew up in liturgical churches that are super familiar with this. And they're like, what's wrong with you guys? What's wrong with you evangelicals?
Yeah.
Like, this has been around for a long time, y'all.
Right.
I've wanted to do that, but gracefully, because charismatics, some evangelicals, there is a reasonable and logical reason why, like, that went away for a while, because they're in the part of the danger of liturgical backgrounds is that you go through these practices with no intention, no purpose. That's just what you do.
Yeah.
And there's some beauty in that, but you do miss a lot. And there's many people who became very legalistic about it. And so there's a lot of kind of word and faith, charismatic, that was just kind of a backlash to all of that legalism. Mm-hmm. And that's reasonable. Like, the more I've talked with my dad, because he initially was just like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And there was a time where I just had to be like, I'll let you know in a couple of years. I'm just navigating something and I don't understand it. There's something that I'm longing for, a rootedness that's beyond the charismatic move. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to walk away from that. I have no intention. I want to take what's valuable of the Word and Faith movement, the Pentecostal movement, evangelical movement. I want to take all the positive of that, but I don't want to lose something that has progressively gotten lost, but I do think has some value. And that's the need for something beyond the material. I think that there is a desire that's a backlash of materialism. And there's not a lot of the American evangelical Christian church is able to really reach that right now. We're doing it trying to just fight over doctrine and politics. And I'm not saying that those fights aren't worth it or that there isn't something that we need to fight for, but there's also things that we've missed in centuries of church history that maybe we shouldn't have thrown the entire thing out.
Yeah.
And now I've been slowly introducing one little bit at a time to our church. And last year, was the first time we did the reading, or was it 2 years ago?
I think 2 years ago was the first time we did it again last year.
Okay. So, yeah. So 2 years ago we did, like a daily reading plan, mm-hmm. To just help people. And that was just me putting my little toe in the water to see is our whole church ready for this? And so far it's been great because we've tried to keep the right intention, the right framework. This doesn't make you holier. It doesn't make you more righteous. It's not anything you do for God. It's just something that helps us draw closer to Jesus in the midst of all this. And so we're just now getting that kind of back into the fabric of our church, where hopefully over this year and next year, we'll be able to train people in practices that help. Because I'm still learning. I mean, I'm 8 or 9 years into it, and I still feel like a novice in what all we would do. We've got friends that kind of came from liturgical backgrounds. It's like, oh, y'all sweet little evangelicals. There's all this other stuff you don't know about. And I'm like, yeah, I agree. I want to do better at it.
And the other thing about it too is none of it is to lay another burden on people or to say, hey, you ought to celebrate this way. It's more of just like, what have we found that has helped us emphasize the right things or helped us find meaning mm-hmm. in something that had lost a bit of its meaning, mm-hmm. something that had kind of grown cold or empty or focused on the wrong things. And there's beauty to be found in
some of the historical ways that it, when you look and you really understand some of the meaning behind what was done, like the candle, like, okay, lighting a candle, maybe that's just weird for people.
Yeah. Right?
But whenever you understand the intentionality behind it, like how each candle has a theme and mm-hmm. that it's not about like lighting a candle or smelling anything. It's about like, hey, there's a point of light that we're going to, mm-hmm. it gives something for us all to focus on.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. Like even just lighting a candle, how it changes the atmosphere in the room. Like mm-hmm. it makes my kids calm yep. down a little bit more.
And just like, even just psychologically smell.
Yeah.
You have some of your greatest memories are attached to smell.
Yep.
And so you light a candle with a particular smell and then you bring in certain practices, Jesus focused.
Yep.
In the moment, they may not think that much of it, but then 20 years down the road, yep. they smell it again. And all of a sudden they're remembering things about Jesus and family and yep. food yeah. and time together. And, yep. and it can end up being a positive memory.
Yeah. It's a way of engaging beauty, and beautiful things even in an artistic way that, that I think adds a lot of value. You know, changing the environment, like the room that we pray in is also the room that we watch TV in. Well, let's turn off the TV for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's choose to make this space sacred for a while. And let's focus and pay attention. And I just found that there's some beautiful moments that happen in there. There's a ton of silliness. There's mm-hmm. a ton of goofiness and a ton of mom and dad rolling our eyes thinking, oh my gosh, is this any of this sinking in?
Uh-huh.
And then you have little moments that pop up where you're just like, wow, God, you showed up.
Yeah.
And it's really awesome to see when it all comes together that way.
Yeah.
Well, I think that brings us to the end of the holiday Christmas Advent extravaganza episode.
Wow. Yeah.
There was a lot of descriptors in that sentence.
As a parent, we're advocates for Advent and don't throw Christmas out just because it used to be a pagan holiday.
Yeah.
It, like the rest of us pagans, got redeemed. And yep. you can choose what to do with that or not, but we've just seen a lot of beauty in it. So that's obviously our stance, but yep. you know, but
yeah, or at least yours and mine.
It's mine. We'll see where Tyler's
at. Yeah, I don't know. I will see. I mean, it is a pagan holiday. I don't know.
We'll see. Now, as a reminder, Pastor Jacob is going on sabbatical, or is actually already on sabbatical at the time this came out. So this is it as far as the podcast goes for now. Mm-hmm. We're taking a break. We hope that you've enjoyed these episodes. Please like, comment, share, leave a review. Tyler, is there anything else that I'm missing?
I think that's it. We appreciate you guys, and we'll catch you in the next one.